Blog Talk Radio. Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see
you're about to see in here, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, girl, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to
sing along.
Every voice and sing, till it in heaven, bring me the harmony. Oh, let it be.
Let our rejoices rise high.
Loud as the Georgia.
Yeah.
our God and true to our native land.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Risin, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Risin offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Risin. Visit us online at phoenixrisin.com.
When were you last on an amazing vacation? I'm Tracy Lewis, leisure travel specialist with Pogo World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
In this, her first romance novel, State of Ecstasy, Jew Ephraim finds passion on the lush island of Martinique. Reminiscent of the works of Klipas and Lawrence, Jew Ephraim's rich emotional landscape delivers an achingly accessible complexity that makes State of Ecstasy steamy, provocative, and fresh, and its author a forceful new voice who brings an entirely new level of heat to romance. With her soon-to-be-released paranormal novel, Ephraim is giving us a brand new insight into this genre. Find her books on Amazon, iTunes, and wherever books are sold.
Does your insurance company work for you? Hi, this is Ken Robinson, President and CEO of Ken Robinson & Associates Limited. We are an insurance brokerage firm located at 5963 West Madison Street, Chicago, Illinois. Our phone number is 773-626-0883. We make the insurance experience easier by shopping for you, saving you time and money. Our agency features the best insurance products, giving you the most competitive prices. We insure needs for less, featuring life, health, annuities, homeowners, auto, SR22, bond cards, business owners policies, general contractors liability, and vacant buildings. Now, we also offer coverages most major insurance companies no longer offer. Please call for a free quote at 773-626-0883.
Attention business owners, radio show producers, and internet radio producers. It's time to crank it up for 2012 with quality radio production. Are you a record label needing hot album promos or EPKs for your new artists? Introducing CoolVoiceRadio.com. Does your internet show need a new intro or outro? How about a promo for your upcoming event? Are you a DJ needing a hot voice for your next hot mixtape? Imagine increased sales in your business from an internet radio spot. We've got you covered with broadcast quality radio spot production with the nation's top voiceover talent, featuring talent like John Heath, Kate Clifford, Bill Thomas, and much, much more. Visit us online at www.coolvoiceradio.com. Coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800. Remember, nothing beats the right sound.
My part of town, my part of town is similar to Vietnam. My part of town,
my part of town. It's similar to Vietnam. My part of town is similar to Vietnam.
You don't know,
cause
you don't feel what I feel.
My part of town is similar to Vietnam.
You don't know, cause you don't feel.
I'm from the place of domestic violence, where the people dying from the self-hatred virus, where the kids go to school and they think learning is cruel. Must forgot about the kids in the world with no shoes, a food to eat for a freaking week. We walk around $100 sneakers on our feet and brag and boast in the ghettos as we toast the Patron, claiming streets we don't even own, on crone in our home. I'm devoid of a father figure. That's why the brothers be out here like I'm a
gangster nigga.
Learn your history lesson. Learn how they slaughtered and murdered our ancestors now. Now that's gangster how they did our ancestors now. You ain't a gangster cause you say it on the record, huh? The real gangster, you fakers, are the automakers and the bankers that steal owe us 40 acres.
My part of town, my part of town, it's similar to Vietnam.
You don't know.
Don't tempt me, getting paid. But really, pockets is empty, ain't that strange? Across 8 Mile, it's calm. Detroit is more similar to Vietnam. And the unified niggas is a hard ass job. We wanna live in these slums and let our sounds go. Boom, boom. Done when we young. Be damned if it's one of my sons not come where I'm from.
Where you from?
And take a walk down Murder Lane on the Ave, where the girls are insane. With the sag, I hate on the flag. How long will this foolishness last? Can you add, do the math? Fast food plus some cartoons, plus the lack of love equal kids so rude. Parents too soon, killing to get more.
Get money.
We're spiritually poor, this is war.
My part of town, my part of town, it's similar to Vietnam.
You don't know, cause you don't feel what I feel.
My part of town, my part of town, it's similar to Vietnam.
You don't know.
That's what recession is ended, oh yeah? Around here ain't nobody hiring. How about they come to your crib and steal your copper wiring? Or even worse off, get the firing. Have me down chase the pavement cause your car they're admiring. I bet you wouldn't think it's over then. Tough times turn warm hearts to colder men. And it ain't just the youth, it's the older men. Exploding after so long from holding in. Pain stains the heart till you can't smile. And Vietnam ain't got nothing no Finkel to 8 Mile. It's enough to make your bones quiver. I'm surprised they ain't put battleships in the Detroit River. This ain't living, this is hell. People feel like they living in a prison, no different than a cell. Cause they scared to walk the streets they dwell, wondering if they gonna be another innocent kill. Cause cats lost consciousness, they killing that will. Whatever happened to the love revealed? Let's bring it back, huh?
My part of town, my part of town, it's similar to Vietnam.
You don't know.
It had been expected, but it still came as a shock this week when the city of Detroit filed for the largest municipal bankruptcy in history, a record $19 billion. Once a city of 2 million people, Detroit's population has plummeted to 700,000. It takes an hour for police to respond to calls. Almost half the city's schools have closed in the last 3 years. Some consider Detroit an urban disaster area. Joining us this morning in the studio here to talk about the city's problems, Michigan's Republican Governor Rick Snyder. Governor, thank you so much for coming. Let me just start with the obvious. What does this mean for the people of Detroit? Are the police and the firemen still going to get paid? Will some of them be laid off, or what happens now?
Yeah, Bob, this is a very tragic situation, and this was a very difficult decision, but it's the right one. We looked through every other viable option. We worked in good faith towards many other courses of action. And this has been 60 years in the making, as you said, going back to the 2 million people that Detroit once had. Ultimately, if you step back and say, this is an opportunity to stabilize Detroit and grow Detroit, and because you have to get back to the fundamentals of the most important thing is not just the debt question. The debt question needs to be addressed, $18 billion in liabilities. But even more important is the accountability to the citizens of Detroit. They're not getting the services they deserve, and they haven't for a very long time. So this can's been getting kicked down the road for decades.
So what
enough
about
is
this?
Enough, and now's the time to turn
so
it around.
So what about it? Will your police force stay at the same level? Will you have to lay off people?
No. Immediately what happens with bankruptcy is we're continuing normal operations. But I'll tell you, normal operations are not good enough. But people will still get paid. People are coming to work. People will get what I would describe as regular service. I wouldn't call it normal service. The good part is we already have a number of steps in place to improve things in Detroit, because we need to do that. Again, they deserve a better answer, the wonderful people of Detroit. Because if you look at it, one thing that's already happened is there's a new police chief coming, there's new police vehicles. There's opportunities to look at these issues, because in some cases, 58 minutes for response time is absolutely unacceptable.
And what about the 20, what do you have, 20,000 people retired on city retirements? Will they, is their retirement, is their pension in jeopardy? Can they expect it to be cut? What happens to them?
And that's one of the other tragic situations of this, that your heart has to go out to anyone, these retirees that worked hard for the city, they're on a fixed income. There is a challenge there. But what I would say is the bankruptcy process allows us to do it in a much thoughtful, more deliberate, better way where they can have a voice at the table. During the process that we've been going through about talking to creditors, no one wanted to represent the retirees. So proactively, in the bankruptcy petition we put in, we've asked the judge to put together a group of retirees, someone to represent the retirees, so they can have a voice at the table, we can hear from them. The other thing I would mention to you in particular, we've already said short term through the end of the year, there won't be any change. Beyond that, the real question also is to the degree the pension plans are funded, that there are assets, they're not part of this process. Those will continue. They will be there to help them. It's the unfunded piece, and there's a terrible history there of mismanagement, of poor investment, of other things that should get aired out public and should be part of this discussion.
Let me ask you this. Mayor David Bing said this morning on ABC, I think, that no decision has yet been made on asking for a federal bailout. Do you think there is a federal bailout in Detroit's future?
No. And I don't expect one. I've said before, the state cannot bail out the city of Detroit. And part of the context I would say that to you in is, it's not about just putting more money in a situation. It's about better services to citizens again. It's about accountable government. And so what we're doing at the state level, and I would ask the federal government the same thing, is let's come up with targeted programs where we can see there's real value to citizens for improvement. I'll give you one tangible illustration we are partnering with the city government, the state, and the federal government on, is about taking down blighted structures. We were able to obtain $100 million that hopefully within the next 30 days, we'll start deploying those dollars towards taking some of those 78,000 abandoned structures down. They've been going on for years.
You know, the federal government bailed out General Motors. It bailed out Chrysler. That worked out pretty well. Are you saying that that is just simply not on the table as far as your concern?
If the federal government wants to do that, that's their option. That's always their alternative. The way I view it is I want to partner with all levels of government and stay focused on services to citizens.
But you, as a state official, you would not ask the federal government to do that.
Again, I don't view that as the right answer. The right answer is bankruptcy is there to help deal with the debt question. The more important question is better services to the citizens, police, fire. Think about the poor child, the young girl walking to school in October, wondering, going about blighted structures, wondering, is it safe? That's the situation we have to focus on, and those can be very focused, targeted things that we can measure results and make sure we're doing a better job.
And what about bondholders? What are people that own these municipal bonds, once considered the safest investment one could make? Are there bonds in danger here?
That's going to be part of this process. And realistically, if you step back, if you were lending to the city of Detroit in the last few years, didn't you understand there were major issues and problems? And look at the yields they're obtaining compared to other bonds. They were getting a premium. So this is a tough situation where you need to walk through it. But basically, Detroit hasn't had a positive fund balance since 2004 in its general fund. 2004. So this isn't a recent occurrence. This has been going on. And that's my point is, enough is enough. One thing I'd really emphasize, there are great things going on in Detroit outside of city government. So I view this as removing the last major negative obstacle is young people are coming, business is coming, let's get this resolved, let's grow Detroit.
Well, Governor, you got a hard job ahead of you, and I know all of us wish you the best of luck with this. Thank you so much for taking time to join us.
Left of Detroit wants the process. Detroit is a huge city, 239 square miles. You know, you could fit San Francisco, Boston, and Manhattan inside the city's borders and have room left over. This was once home to 2 million people, yet in all that area, there are now only about 700,000, a third of that, which means it's a very empty city. The dark blue areas, 60% empty. 78,000 abandoned houses, another 66,000 empty lots. You've read that statistic, of course, that 40% of the streetlights don't work well. How about 60% of the city's ambulances? And the city has 11,000 to 12,000 fires a year, the highest violent crime rate in the country. And those are problems that bankruptcy can't fix. What they have is a legacy of bad management. They have computer systems that don't work and are so far out of date they can't even be used. And they don't have enough money coming in to pay to fix any of that. More than 16% of the people in Detroit are unemployed. The median income, just $27,000. The city's property and income taxes are as high as they can go by law, the highest in the state, and yet collections are collapsing. So once you get past bankruptcy, there still isn't much left to build on there. The city can't afford to provide services to that vast area. Residents have rejected the idea of shrinking the city. So far, nobody's come up with a good idea how to make Detroit viable once it gets through the bankruptcy.
Nobody has come up with any good ideas. Are there any floating out there?
There are a few, but they're pretty much the standard ideas. One thing Michigan did was pass a law giving tax breaks to movie companies, but not enough of them come. Quicken Loans founder Dan Gilbert has done a lot for the downtown area, but that's not the rest of the city. What he's trying to do is bring in a lot of entrepreneurs, tech startups, and things like that. So far, they've created about 4,000 jobs, nowhere near what you need. No one has a plan to bring in enough jobs to fill in the holes in that vast city.
All right.
347-838-9825. Let's go in and start. I got my man Jason, and I'm going to bring Gino in if he's in there right now. And I just played the clip, so I see the banks. I mean, the courts cleared the banks. Gave them opportunities to file for bankruptcy. So with that at? They say right now we don't know about the pensions, Gino. So how does that play into everything?
You talking to me?
Yeah, Gino. I mean, how does that play into everything, Gino, with the pensions and you know, everything like that? Tell people.
Well, I would think I would think they would do something to protect the pensions. I don't think that they're going to just allow that. That's the major concern. I mean, I guess if you got to swallow something, that's the one part of it you have to swallow. There is going to be probably some changes to the pension as far as what the payouts are going to be, but I'm sure for the most part they're going to try to protect the pensions. But there is going to be some kind of negotiation as far as getting those resolved. I mean, they want to pay so much, they're probably not going to pay as much as they have in the past, but they are going to pay something. So what that number is going to be mathematically, I can't figure it out. Or no yet, I guess that information hasn't been released, but I think that's how they're going to basically look at that. Like, you know, we can give you a certain percentage, but, you know, some is better than none type deal. That's usually what happens with the bankruptcy. You know, if you go through like a regular Chapter 13 as a regular consumer, the 13, you pay so much. You don't pay all of it, but you pay so much. And so the bankruptcy Chapter 9 is kind of similar, that they get a little bit of some leeway on what they can do and cannot do. But, you know, people will get something, and unfortunately, it's just the city don't have it to give them all, you know, and still maintain. So, you know, that's the sacrifice even the retirees are going to have to make right now. You know, as long as you don't lose your medical, you know what I'm saying? That's important too. But as far as the pension amount and stuff like that, the stuff, the other things that they pay for, as long as you don't lose 100% of it. I mean, I guess in this economy and this, you know, how this world is now today, Detroit is suffering, and they just – and maybe when it comes out of bankruptcy, there's agreement to pay more. So until all the facts come out in the courts, I mean, you really don't know exactly everything, the detail as far as what is actually going to take place.
Okay, Gino, that's cool. I got Monica Independent Radio checking in. Before I bring her in, what you got to say, Jason? Oh, that's a lady that was on last week that I'm glad that she called in. They encouraged me to buy part two of the show. What you got, Jason, with this?
Well, my thing is, one is that, you know, it's still up here on the air. They have questions about this bankruptcy, whatever, because actually, filing it, it was, you know, against the Michigan Constitution, because actually the pensions are protected under the Michigan Constitution. And that's, you know, I actually, that's been one of the things that they've actually been trying to go after for years, is the Detroit, you know, pension fund, because it has, you know, billions of dollars that is in that. And so, and actually when they're, and they've added that into this, you know, so-called debt, you know, deficit that the city has, but actually the you know, the pension fund basically takes care of itself. And so, you know, for you, it's, you know, it's kind of egregious for you to come in and say that you're going to add on this debt, you know, and saying that that's part of the city's debt, but it's really not. It doesn't come out of the city's general fund, you know, as that. And plus, you know, any debt that it has, that the pension fund has, is already protected by itself. They have, you know, the funds to protect the pension fund, you know, from debt. But like I said, that's, you know, another one of the things that they are actually coming after and want to. And why would you even want to deal, you know, go after the pension and deal with that after, you know, these individuals have worked all these years and this is what was, you know, promised to them. And that's why Michigan, you know, Constitution protects the pensions, you know, from things like this. So they're going to, you know, be at the table. And, you know, of course, they're going to try to come out and do give the worst case scenario for these pension holders, because there's nobody there to protect them. And so they've been, you know, down there trying to fight, because they just had the first hearing, I think it was either yesterday or today. And, you know, folks are down there protesting, you know, about that. And we'll see. But my thing is, you know, as the governor was talking about, oh, yeah, services, and they want to bring Detroit back. I said, yeah, they want to, but it's not going to be for, you know, the black and brown people in the city. They're not trying to, you know, create or build or rebuild this city for black and brown people. That's just the bottom line. Because if you look at all what's going on downtown, Dan Gilbert has come in and bought up half of downtown. You got other people coming in, making investments. They're building from the center out, and it's with not with us in mind. And, you know, how you look at it, they want to take all of the jewels of the city. They want the waterfront. They want, you know, the water. They want, you know, the Belle Isle. They want, you know, they want it all. You know, and Dave Bing, he was, you know, basically put in there to do that. He did his job. He did his job. He was put in there to come in and dismantle the city and to give it away, and that's what he's been doing. He's right in, you know, lockstep. And because this whole bankruptcy thing, you know, this was already in play back in January. You know, we have, you know, a young brother by the name of Robert Davis, and I got a lot of respect for this young brother, man. He's with the unions here, and he's constantly out there on their heads, bringing up lawsuits, bringing up issues, you know, and you know, so to not allow them to come in and just railroad us like that. And so he got emails that was showing how they were already talking about the bankruptcy of this back in January before they even hired the emergency manager came down. And he was involved in that. And even the white boy running for mayor, Mike Duggan, he was even involved in the talks in selecting who the emergency manager was. They didn't talk to any other mayoral candidate, so why would you talk to him? And, you know,
exactly.
The whole thing. So, you
that's
know,
hilarious.
So that's you know, Monica said they're doing that.
Let me bring Monica in for a second. Let me bring Monica in from Independent Underground Radio. What you got to say, Monica?
Well, I mean, pretty much he basically said what needed to be said. I don't know how much people know about long-term obligations when it comes to dealing with financial affairs. Pensions are considered long-term obligations. They are, okay, everyone that is a potential City of Detroit retiree is not all going to retire at once. in the same aspect, you can also restructure how you pay the pensions and health care for retirees, depending on the situation. If we go back and we look at GM, okay, that's a perfect example. GM, when they went into their bankruptcy, what they did, even though they did get bailed out from the government, but what they did is that they restructured some of the health care benefit and also basically the vision and also the dental. A lot of GM retirees lost their vision for at least about 2 years. They have to pay, they get a small benefit now, but it's nowhere near like it was. And also, when you look at the dental portion of their benefit, that has changed tremendously in comparison to how it used to be before the bankruptcy. Now, they still have their pension, but GM saved a lot of costs just by changing the vision and the health care. What Rick Snyder and basically Kevin Orr is looking to do is that they're not trying to say, okay, well, maybe we can, what we can do is that we can reinvest, you know, some of the money that is sitting inside the pension fund and some of maybe some more of the secure stocks and securities that can help grow money for this particular pension fund. They're not saying that. Okay, they're not even trying to figure out ways to manage it. What they're trying to do is basically leave anywhere from, I think, 20 to 40 retirees, right, that are old and cannot go out and get another job. I don't know how many people is going to hire people at, like, 65, 70 years old. I mean, it's not going to happen. And they're just basically trying to leave these people out to dry. What's going to happen for real... And a lot of people don't know this. They do have something called a federal guarantee retirement fund. A lot of people don't know when a company resolves their pension or resolves basically their retirement plan. Those people do not just don't get any money. What they do is that they actually fall on the federal government. They get the maximum amount of about $30,000 a year. So in other words, instead of the city of Detroit paying the retirement for the 70 and 80 and 65 years old, guess what? We're all going to be paying for it. And I'm just trying to figure out, does Rick Snyder think he's slick? Because what he's trying to do is that he's trying to dump this long-term obligation on the backs of everyone, right? And then meanwhile, on the other side, sell all the assets of Detroit for pennies on the dollar. I mean, it's crazy. I'm not saying that Detroit could not or would not or should not have done a bankruptcy. Maybe they should have. But the point is that Rick Snyder definitely is not the person to lead them through it, nor is Kevin Orr. And I have to say a couple other things about Kevin Orr in particularly, and also the write-in candidate, Mike Duggan. Mike Duggan, he was actually, before he became the write-in candidate, before he tried to run for mayor and then got kicked off the ballot because he couldn't do 365 days living in the city of Detroit, before all that, he was actually the CEO of the DMC, okay? The DMC is the Detroit Medical Center. It was actually, it was like a venture between the city of Detroit and also Wayne County government. Well, anyway, it started losing money. So Mike Duggan came in there with a Superman cape and basically said he was going to save the day by selling the DMC to a company called Vanguard. All right. Now, a recent transaction just happened between Vanguard and another company called Tenet Group. And a lot of people don't, you know, they didn't watch it, so they don't know. But the interesting part of this is that Tenet Group is 37.9% owned by a company which is called the Blackstone Group. Well, how does this connect in? Well, the Blackstone Group has a lot of dealings. You can actually go Google it. With Jones Day Law Firm, which is the same law firm that Kevin Orr used to work at as a bankruptcy lawyer. Guess what? Also, Jones Day Law Firm also deals in private equity healthcare stocks. Okay, I'm trying to help everybody out here because the point of this is that yes, it is a grand scheme. A lot of people at the top of the chain are planning making a lot of money out of this, but the neighborhoods inside of the city of Detroit, the people that actually live and breathe Detroit, they're going to get shafted, and the retirees are getting shafted. And that's not right. That is, I mean, those people worked for 20, 30 years, 40 years in some cases. Give those people what they have coming. You know, and then let's look at ways that we can restructure the debt that's supposed to exist inside the city of Detroit in order to make the city efficient, to make operations actually function inside that city. Another amazing thing today, Governor Rick Snyder, I think, announced a $325 million development. Guess what? It's for downtown. I could have sworn that on national TV they were talking about Detroit is about $18 billion in debt. No offense, but $325 million could help them get rid of some of that debt. Just some. People need to understand that this is a financial game. And unless you really get the meat and potatoes behind the financials and the economics that are surrounding this whole little scheme, then all you hear is cash crisis, financial crisis, and bankruptcy, and you think that, oh, my God, everything is falling apart. It's not falling apart the way that they want you to believe. It's falling apart because they're putting the chess pieces in place, just like it's, you know, honestly, a Monopoly game if we want to go there, and making you believe that the whole house is broke when the house is not really broke at all. It's still got some cash sitting over there in cash reserves, but they're never going to let you see it. And that's what we're dealing with in the city of Detroit.
Gino, what do you have to say?
Yeah. Well, you know, I agree with her. You know, I mean, she said a lot, and I agree with a lot of things that she says. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, what my stance is on it is why is it not anyone speaking out? Why is city council just walking away their jobs, leaving and quitting? Why is there no leadership in there? Stopping the governor, stopping the mayor, I mean, even the people that's involved. I mean, you got to find out everybody who's involved right now in the city of Detroit as far as all this, the bankruptcy and the leadership and all of that stuff like that. You got to say, you know, if everybody knows all the information, why is nobody putting forth the action committee groups and putting this information directly in their face and, like, let's put a halt to this? Even if you got to put it in the media to let people know what's going on, to get people upset about what's going on. I mean, this information is vital.
I totally agree with you.
It should be communicated through all networking sources to let people know exactly what Governor Snyder – Governor Snyder is going through this cleanly because nobody's in opposition of it. If you don't have an alternate plan, you can't stop the master plan. Just like you
exactly.
And everything you say seems right. Now, I can't, like you say, you have to Google and verify it, but everything seems like it falls into play. But at the same context, like I was telling the guys the other night, it's like we as black folks, we got to start looking at these things, get the information out to one another, and find out this is what's getting ready to happen to your city. Get them upset and get fired up and start getting people coming together. This is you know, we come together for Trayvon Martin and we come together for Barack Obama and all these other things. Come together on stuff like this in the city of Detroit. Make a stance about all this stuff and get the information to the people and say, look, before y'all just allow the governor to come in here and bankrupt the city, you know, then watch out because this is the master plan. And this is good information. And most of the stuff you're talking about, people don't know. And then you're right. Dugan was down with McNamara in that scandal. Before he died, Dugan was going to be out. He was going to go down. You know,
correct.
Nobody knows about that scandal with McNamara and all the Wayne County guys. And Dugan, he was right there with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, here everybody is acting like he's the right guy that's going to save Detroit. This guy is the second phase, just like you said, sister. He's the second phase of the Dave Bing era. Dave Bing is a businessman. He know how to go out and close the business down, and that's exactly what he did to Detroit. He just closed it down. He came in, closed it down, and said, you know what? You know why? Because Dave Bing ain't from Detroit. He played for the Pistons. He's not from Detroit. He don't feel the city. He don't feel that he ain't been here. He don't know nothing about the city. That's why it's easy for him to chose to be the mayor, come in here, close it down, and that's it. Just like
and Gino, when you were talking about the you know, why city council is not doing nothing, because they're all in. You know, they're in the pocket. The ones that were fighting, you know, you only have maybe two or three of this current, you know, city council that was about anything. You know,
agreed.
The rest of them was right there lock and step. You know, look at Gary Brown. Now, you know, he ought to be ashamed of himself. First of all, you shouldn't have ran for, you know, city council. Okay, you sued the city. You know, I will give you that because of what happened with that situation. Okay, you got your money. Go somewhere and sit down and enjoy your money.
Yeah,
you
a lot of
come
money.
And get paid by the city, and then, you know, you're not working for the people of the city, and then you want to turn around and resign your job and go work for the, you know, for the emergency manager, and now you're going to get paid, you know, $250,000? Come on.
Yeah, he got a 60% raise. If people don't understand, he went from $79,000 a year to $225K. That is a 60-plus percent raise. That's crazy.
That's a good pay rate. It's always a lot of money to turn on your own people. So, you know, if white people could take somebody out of city council, and I'm not trying to put a race card on this, but let's just say this grand scheme of things, the master plan to take your own and make them turn against you. It's the same as, you know, when you were a slave and I'm running out the house because master beat us, we got to get free. Then one guy says, I'm going to stay here because this we's house. You know, this master house, we house, and master own the house. You know, we run and liberate ourselves. We're trying to liberate. And this Garrett Brown is like, I'm not liberating. I'm going to go down with the grand scheme of things, just like James Dean. They all sold their soul on this, and they don't care nothing about City of Detroit because they got the negative stereotypical view about what's going on in City of Detroit. Without going into the neighborhood, listening to their own citizens, how the town hall meeting on Dexter Linwood, 7 mile, 6 mile of Puritan, and basically find out what's going on in these neighborhoods, what can we do better to make people feel more comfortable and bring people back to the neighborhood. We just assuming that everybody's bad and everybody's doing whatever they necessarily have to do on their own and they don't care nothing about City of Detroit. That's not true about everybody.
You said
everybody,
it right there.
Everybody do care about City of Detroit. If you're a true Detroiter, you care about it, but you feel like you're a small group of people that can do anything about it. But we have to get the information that you have, sister, and you have to get that information publicized, however networking group that needs to be done so people can know exactly what's happening in Detroit and why you shouldn't be trusting Dave Bing anymore, why we shouldn't be looking at Gary Brown as going to do anything with this city as far as his position, that he's got an ulterior motive that's all in the major game of plan, and you better stop Dugan from getting that right-in candidacy and like
right.
He's going to do something. He's going to just be the second half of it. I don't personally live in Detroit anymore. I love Detroit, but I got a daughter. You know what I'm saying? And I can't afford anything to happen to my child in Detroit if we don't have no police officers. We're not going to call the police and wait 2 hours and something happen. We've got to take things on our stand-the-ground rules up in here. But, you know, I love Detroit. I've always loved Detroit. That's why I came back to Michigan to be around Detroit. But at the same time, you frown on the leadership that Detroit has represented since the Kwame Kilpatrick era. I thought Dennis Otto was a decent mayor. I get a lot of opposition on that. When they talked about in that conference, they said in 2004 is when we didn't have a surplus until 2004. Well, if I'm calculating right, that's right around when Dennis Otto was still in office.
That is correct. What happened, if you go back and you look at the Archer administration right at the last 4 years of John Engler, they did what's called a deal. The deal was, to make a long story short, is that the state of Michigan would hold a tremendous portion of the city of Detroit's tax revenue in order for the city, and they would get them back, when the city of Detroit actually reduced their income taxes. I believe their city income taxes needed to be under 2%, and the business income tax needed to be under 1.5%. Well, everything was going fine with, you know, this little sharing arrangement. It's called, like, state share of revenue. Everything was going fine until right around, if I have it correct, towards the end of the Engler administration, which would have been, I believe, like 2000. Right, 1999-2000. And what happened is that the state of Michigan was running nearly a $1 million or billion-dollar deficit. And so because of that, Engler could not give the city of Detroit its proper share of state share revenue. And since that point, and even through the Grand Home, they have not got what it is that they have been due from the state of Michigan. Somewhere it's estimated right now that the state of Michigan owes the city of Detroit in share revenue payments about $220 million.
I got a question for you, sister. Is any way the city of Detroit can file legal action against the state of Michigan? I'm not sure 100% on how the Constitution works as far as if a small municipal goes against the state based on monies being owed. I mean, like anybody else, like if you don't pay somebody, they can take you to court legally and sue you if there's a debt, if you can show that the debt is owed. If that be the case, why haven't the city of Detroit or its representatives or how we structure that, why haven't they made that
because
decision to go after the money inside of the state of Detroit?
I totally agree. If you go back to the whole fight that Crystal Crittenden was having pretty much with Mir being in also Governor Snyder, that's what it was about. But because of the way that the Detroit Charter reads, in order to go after the state of Michigan inside of a lawsuit or any entity inside of a lawsuit, the mayor has to sign off on that lawsuit. Mayor Bing refused to sign off on a potential lawsuit that Crystal Crittenden was trying to go and get that money or sue the state of Michigan to get that state share revenue back inside of Detroit. That was around January all the way to March of this year. And then he demoted her.
With the state of Michigan at that time, the same thing where they were going, that's when they started their attack on Detroit public schools, because again, there's billions of dollars that comes through Detroit public schools and these urban school centers, and with this unwanted attack, because this with that $327 million deficit or debt that Detroit public schools has, that was all done under the agents of the state, because in 1999 when Engler decided to take over the schools because of a $1.5 billion bond issue that was voted on back in 1994, a construction bond to build new schools and to build and to renovate some schools, because they didn't want that to happen for, this black city. They didn't want that to happen. So when, and I will also, preface it with this, is that the school board at that time and those that were in charge with Detroit Public Schools, yes, they are a big part of all this, because they were mismanaging and just, and not doing what they should have been doing with that money. But then, the white boys went to Engler saying, hey, we got to get this money. That's when he came in 1999 and declared a state takeover of the school district when there was no financial emergency. There was no academic emergency. He had a $93 million surplus.
Sure.
And he still came in and took over the school. And when Kenneth Burnley came in, he came in and he, under Granholm, he took out $230 million. First, you go from $93 million surplus to being in debt, $180 million, and you take out a $230 million loan, and Granholm signs off on it. Then you bring in Robert Bob, who takes it up another $110 million. And then here's, Roy Roberts, who there. Claiming, I got rid of $250 million. No, you didn't. The debt is still there. All you did was refinance the loan. All you did was refinance the debt and got it out, stretched out over a longer period of time. And when you were talking about these black folks, like you said, it's like the house Negro and the field Negro. And that's what he's been rigging. If you look at what Snyder has done, he's always going out trying to find the black face to put a black face in there. So that if anything, if when it all goes down, it won't be on him. It's going to be, oh, yeah, this is the black man. This is y'all. This is y'all guy. He came in to do it. Because, all he's doing is putting these people that are in black face. That's all they are. And that's like I said on Monday. And if you look at what they're doing, as I said, I feel that they're trying to destroy everything that created the black middle class here in Michigan, which was education and the automotive industry. You attack the unions, you come up with, with this daggone right to work law, and, then you go after education and look at what that was. If you were a teacher, you were making good money here in Detroit.
Yes, you are.
You worked for one of the big three, you were making good money. And, one of my friends, his mother was a teacher, his father worked at the plant. Good middle class, strong middle class, and now they're destroying that, so they can just, get rid of that. They're,
the point of that, I totally agree. The point of this is to make sure, if you go back in, to make sure that blacks don't move into their neighborhoods, if you go back into basically the early 2000s, might as well say all the way up to 2000, well, even before that, you go back into the mid-1990s, all the way up till the time of the housing collapse in 2007. African American people, particularly African American people in Michigan, were making great strides educationally wise, basically financially wise. In other words, you were able to move right, out of the traditional urban areas into what was called suburbia, and particularly the areas that they didn't really want you to move in, like, you know, I'm just going to say Rochester Hills, Grosse Pointe Farms, those type of areas, you know. And that started to worry some of our Caucasian brothers and sisters. You know, they really did not want us to be able to have a house on the same block that they can have their house on. They didn't want our people, you know, to come over and enjoy 4th of July dinner, you know, at our house, even though it has nothing to do with them. It really didn't. But the fact that they were all coming into the neighborhood, those folks, oh, it's a problem. So we really have got to make a way in order to suppress this African-American community. And you're right. The way that you do it is that you take out the jobs that allow for the migration. That would be unionized jobs, that teacher jobs. Basically, you have to take away the education base. You have to do all of these things in order to suppress and keep them over there. And that's what's going on right now. And it's really sad to see. But, you know, I mean, we have to basically call it for what it is. If we don't do that, then we'll fight amongst ourselves, and you'll have some basically doing what I like to call the Uncle Tom thing. Oh, yeah, you know, yeah, I'm one of you, you know, but really I'm working for him. You know, and we have to come past that, because we can actually get past this issue, but we're not going to get past this issue unless we realize what the problem is and be ready to fight against it.
Absolutely. Well, I don't want to jump in from that point on. That gave me a great equipoint to take a break. Monica, why don't you tell everybody about your blog, radio station, where they can find you and what time, and then I'm going to go to a break. But the question I'm going to ask you all is after the break and stuff like that, y'all can tell me how y'all feel. Two-part question. If it's against the Detroit Capitals to go bankrupt, then why are they allowing it to go on? And if the church is bankrupt, then you don't answer it now. Just tell me, you know, ask on the other side, Monica, and Jason. Yeah, Detroit is going bankrupt. What is so wrong with dumping the pensions on the federal government? Like you said, the law has it already in play, which Governor Snyder is trying to backdoor it. Now, I'm going to ask both of those questions on the other side of the break. But, Monica, I want you to let my listeners know where they can find you at. Mm-hmm. And maybe Gino and Jason can come on your show and talk about these issues also.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. We are Independent Underground Radio Live. We're on the Blog Talk Radio Network on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can reach us at www.blogtalkradio.com/ROJS Radio. We look forward to having you come and listen to our show, and feel free to call in to 347-934-0185.
We're going to break. Be right back in a minute.
My part of town is similar to Vietnam. My part of town is similar to Vietnam.
You don't know.
Similar to Vietnam.
You don't know how, you don't live.
I'm from the place of domestic violence, for the people dying from the self-hatred virus, where the kids go to school and they think learning is cruel. Must forget about the kids in the world with no shoes, a food to eat for a freaking week. We walk around $100 sneakers on our feet and brag and boast in the ghettos as we toast the Patron, claiming streets we don't even own, on crone in our home. I'm devoid of a father figure. That's why the brothers be out here like I'm a
gangster nigga.
Learn your history lesson. Learn how they slaughtered and murdered our ancestors. How? Now that's gangster how they did our ancestors. Now you ain't a gangster cause you say it on the record, huh? The real gangster you fakers are the automakers and the bankers that still owe us 40 acres.
My part of town, is similar to Vietnam.
You don't know.
Don't tempt me, getting paid. But really, pockets is empty, ain't that strange?
Across 8 Mile, it's calm. Detroit is more similar to Vietnam. And the unified niggas is a hard-ass job. We want to live in these slums and let our sounds go. Ba-boom, boom. Dumb when we young. Be damned if it's one of my sons not come where I'm from.
Where you from?
And take a walk down Murder Lane on the Ave where the girls are insane. Put the sag, I hate on the flag. How long will this foolishness last? Can you add, do the math, huh? Fast food plus some cartoons, plus the lack of love equal kids so rude. Parents too soon, killing to get more.
Get money.
We're spiritually poor, this is war.
My part of town, my part of town, it's similar to Vietnam.
You don't know.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Rising, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Rising offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Rising. Visit us online at phoenixrising.com.
Do you hear that sound? Well, that's the sound of back pain. Are you tired of nagging and persistent back pain? Whether you're suffering from a chronic condition or a recent injury, don't fret. Chiropractic has proven to be a natural and holistic alternative to pain medications and surgical procedures. Visit Dr. Todd Tucker at our Water Tower location on Chicago's Magnificent Mile for a free consultation and exam. Call 888-535-2381 to get started with your personalized treatment plan. That's 888-535-2381. Call now.
Try to see if the question I left on the table was, if Governor Schneider is trying to do a backdoor pension drop on Obama, because if that's the case, you know he's going to pay it back off. So if that's the case, we all pay for it, and Detroit gets to restructure its vet system. What's wrong with that? I'm an outsider. That help me out. I don't know. Hello? Anybody?
I'm here. I mean, I'll start. I don't think that it is for, honestly, the Federal Pension Guarantee Fund, which is the federal government. I don't think it is their place in order to pay for the retirees. I think the place to pay for the retirees is within the city of Detroit. And if the one thing that the government could do is the same thing that they did for New York, I believe it was back in the late 1970s, which was bail New York out, or better yet, give them enough money in order for them to still be able to take care of most of their obligations, right, and still be able to survive. I think that shuffling the liabilities or the obligations around from the city of Detroit to the federal government, that's not the way to go. Actually handle the business of trying to get rid of the long-term debt, if that's what it is. But I don't think that's the real purpose here. The real purpose is to try and do their best to lead the retirees out to dry and just take over the assets that the city of Detroit has. That's my idea, but I'll let others speak.
So I think that, I don't think that, you know, it's a game, you know, too, because I think that's what he really wants to do, even though Snyder has been on TV. Oh, no, we're not going to go to the federal government. They shouldn't have to come in. But all along, I believe that's his point. That's his plan, you know, to come in, because they're, you know, not willing to really to go in and negotiate with the, you know, the pension fund and with the retirees. To get something. I think it's all a game, you know, and I think there are other viable ways, because actually the talk of bankruptcy, this is not the first time that it came up in Detroit, you know, and then some of the things that they were talking about, like with, you know, selling, you know, their rights to the tunnel, you know, the Windsor the tunnel going over to Canada. And they were talking, you know, because they were just, the mayor and Anthony Adams, the deputy mayor, was talking about that years ago, and the city council voted it down. And now, again, they're trying to bring it back up to the table again now. So I think, you know, it's a cop-out for the governor, and I don't think, you know, that they should go that way. And if they try to do that, I think that the federal government should bring some kind of, you know, they should, you know, penalize the state some kind of way.
Gino? Go on ahead, man. I mean, you know, I was trying to take your point, you know, by saying, you know, hey, maybe it's a good thing. I mean, you know, I mean, maybe.
I'm on certain issues. I'm in a certain basis, because I don't know some of the details, and I'll at least state the fact that I may not know some of the concrete details of some of the issues they might be trying to turn out as far as how they pay out. But I do know the bankruptcy. I do know how that works. I've dealt with that for years and how liquidation of bankruptcy works. Now, like I said, I think people are owed that money, because it's like Social Security, whatever you get, it's guaranteed money that you were promised at the time of employment. And I'm hoping that the federal government, who is watching the bankruptcy of Detroit very, very closely, gets involved when it comes down to that matter, and find out an equitable way to make sure that the retirees do get their given part. One of the things that might, you know, that really concerns me about all of what's going on, you know, there's got to be a plan. I mean, you know, and I know city council, you got Gary Brown, you got all these guys really turning their heads, going other directions, stuff like that. And it just kind of, you know, somebody who loves Detroit, has been around Detroit for so many years, and then you see people not, you know, actively want to do something about it or not file. You know, you don't have the places. They file lawsuits for anything and everything, but they don't think that's right. If it just holds up and brings attention to an issue, that's all a lawsuit generally does in a lot of issues. If there's an issue or concern that the citizens have in the city of Detroit in this bankruptcy, now is the time. You can file litigation in the Michigan Supreme Court if you want to hear something that we feel that's not fair. But I guess, like the sister said, she's got a lot of knowledge about a lot of things going on behind back doors. And, like, that's the kind of stuff that people need to know and get some kind of direction, which if they can stop it or prevent it or have some kind of resolution with the governor's office and the bankruptcies and everything else that they want to do to the choice. I mean, this is the kind of information they need to know. People need to have a choice. You know, if you just told to vote for somebody, whether you like them, you know, I hear what they talk about Dugan.
and about the DMC. Now, I know the DMC had some trouble, and Dugan was a part of it, but go back some years before that, he was also in that McNamara scandal. McNamara was going through trials and going to court, you know, going to legal proceedings, and this guy, he died, and I guarantee you, if he would have survived, people would be looking at Mike Dugan the same way. But unfortunately, you know, he passed away. That just went under the rug, and he keeps going. Now, I'm with the sister. This guy comes in, you know, he just comes and takes over Dave Bing and moves him out the way, and he's going to continue on the same effort. I'm not so thinking, you know, I'm not being prejudiced or anything like that, and I said a qualified person is a qualified person, and that regards the skin color. But I think Detroit is a little bit of a different flavor because when the majority of their citizens are black and have been black for the last so many hundred, you know, years back, it's like you don't want to just kind of stir the pot, but you want to get a qualified candidate. I knew Dave Bing was kind of a weak, feeble candidate, but there was really no choices. Then before that, it was Kwame Kilpatrick versus Gil Hill. He was old and almost gone. You know, it's just like all this good quality male testosterone sitting close, but nobody takes it serious enough to push the issue, push the envelope, and get to a certain point and run the city. You know, get in and say, I'm gonna run into Detroit. I'm gonna get involved. I mean, Charles Pugh, when he did what he had to do, I thought he was somebody that was gonna come up through the ranks. I'm not being judgmental on his own social life, but I'm saying this guy at least had thought. I mean, which he fooled everybody, but, you know, you thought that he had something like, okay, I'm going to come in Detroit and, you know, go to the council and try to go for the mayor's office. Obviously, you know, he would have been a bad candidate for it. And I guess it just deters me to say, is there somebody, you know, Benny Napoleon wanted to be shown. Benny Napoleon doesn't seem like a strong candidate to me. He don't seem like he can beat Mike Dugan, you know. And the rest of those list of those people don't even seem like they can beat a writing candidate like Mike Dugan. And that's the thing that kind of stressed me out. It's like, how come the politicians or people are not aware of people's achievements and what they're trying to do, or they're not vocal enough? You know, black people have a tendency to follow more of the vocal, strong-voiced leader that stands up in front of a controversy and address issues that nobody else would only talk about behind closed doors. But this person brings it out in the forefront and try to get things done. You know, racism is a consistent battle, even today, especially with the Trayvon Martin case. But black people still, when you unite, you draw attention. So why not unite? Why not continue to unite and stick together? You know, like I said before, if the Muslims could come in the neighborhood and take the prisoners who come out of prison who's doing crime and put them in suits and make them clean citizens and stuff like that. And I'm not saying religion need to have happen, but if there's got to be other situations that we got to identify with our young youth and make them into leaders in Detroit, make them love the place that they are and protect it instead of destroy it. I mean, Detroit is so, you know, so far back and gone. You know, I really want to figure out what, you know, besides the bankruptcy, you know, you see Detroit, you be like, even if you don't know anything about bankruptcy legally and you live in the city of Detroit, you see these rundown neighborhoods, you see these buildings on fire, houses with no house. You say, damn, why don't they run these houses over? And they say they ain't got no money, the bushes ain't cut, the garbage might sit for 3 days, all kind of problems, the buses ain't running, they cut laying off. And it's like, you think in your head, even if you don't know the numbers, you think in your head that bankruptcy's got to be the only salvageable way for Detroit because ain't nothing else getting done. So you can't take a side and say, well, I think this and I think that, because this city has been on fire for so long, and now that there's action moving on it, I think, you know, if people know information, and maybe they'll come together like the Trayvon Martin case. Like I said on the last thing, we came together for Trayvon Martin, but like there's over 500 youth killed in Chicago, Jimmy. There's 300 here in Detroit. I mean, they're getting gunned down every day. And I understand, and I have a son at the same age as Trayvon Martin as well, and I feel like, you know, that would be unjust as well, but it's unjust if anybody shoot my kid. You know, and when we continue to shoot our own, we gotta come together on those issues as well. And the city of Detroit is on fire and kids are going wild. We gotta come together as people and stop being scared of our own kids, our own citizens, and start saying, look, you know, we gotta do better. We gotta attack problem after problem. What's wrong with the neighbors getting volunteered to go cut the grass of a vacant house and make it look real then? You know what I'm saying? You know, do something to protect the neighborhood. And one of the things that I always thought that Detroit, City of Detroit, it was the biggest problem that really destroyed Detroit was the housing market. The value of houses was overinflated, and people were underwater in their houses. and the bank told him to walk away. It is a master plan, sister. I know what you're talking about, because the bank told him to walk away. They said, oh, yeah, we imploded your house and made you think that your house is worth $100,000. Now it's worth $20,000. And you ain't gonna pay, you're not going to pay. You're going to walk away to go get a house out of the suburbs. That master plan has been in place for the last year. That was the housing crash. That was done to me on purpose.
I want to say this. One, you know, I hear what you're saying, Gino, on that. But, you know, we speak, you know, Detroit, you know, it's a city made up of, you know, of pockets. You know, you do have these areas where, you know, you have this rundown area here, and you have these pockets. But then you go through, you know, through Detroit, you know, you go through these neighborhoods. You know, there's the people of Detroit, you know, they care about their homes. They care about the city. They care about where they are. So you can go through just about any neighborhood, and you can see in there. It may just be one or two maybe in that neighborhood, you know, but there's people that keep up their homes. They keep that up, you know, and they, you know, and it's not like it's a total like, oh, Detroit is just dead. It's just a dead city. And that's what they want to present to you. You know, and that's what they, you know, want to, oh, and they don't want you to see the good part of Detroit. And I'm not going to sit up and believe that they're going to say that our police response time is at an hour. But look at how they've cut back and how they've scaled back on our police force. They cut their
How Dave Bing, as of what, last year, I believe it was a year and a half ago, he closed all Detroit precincts, except maybe the one downtown, I believe. But all of them closed at 4 o'clock. Every last one. How come you have a major city and have your precincts closed at 4 o'clock PM?
Right, because exactly, like you said, you think back a few years ago, you never heard about, you know, that was never a complaint. And all things that they're doing, making them, you know, cutting their pay by 20%, 30%, then making them work 12-hour shifts, cause, you know, of course that's going to create that situation. So don't believe the hype. You know, that's it's more for response time. This started to decline in Detroit. It was in 1994 when Governor Engler and the Michigan legislature at that time lifted the residency requirement for the city of, you know, of Detroit. If you worked in Detroit, you know, like most cities, if you live in the city, I mean, if you work in the city, you got to live in the city. But they lifted that up to Detroit, and that opened up the gates for so many folks to leave. And then, you know, because they thought the grass was greener on the other side, you know, and then that gave the opportunity for these folks who weren't from the community to come in and work for the city, become police officers. How are you going to have somebody, in, you know, be a police officer that's not from that community, that don't know the people, that, you know, that doesn't understand the culture? When you have people that were right there, living right there in the city, you know, it was a time when things were different. Okay. But I think along with what you're saying, but like I said, it's not, you know, as grim as they would like to see it, as they're making it seem. But they're doing that so that, because if it was so grim, why would you go downtown, you know, to Campus Marcus or the Riverwalk at 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and you see all these little white folks down there walking hand in hand like they ain't got a care in the world? You know, it's a setup. Come on.
Exactly. I agree. Yeah, I mean, if you're downtown, you know, you would... Go downtown if you ever have a chance to visit Detroit, and if you're, you know, listening to this show. It's like two different worlds. Downtown is just so beautiful. There's cops everywhere. Street lights are all on. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just lovely Daisy. Go. All you got to do is do, like, about 9 blocks down Woodward. Go to New Center and see if you see that same type of attitude. And better yet, the cops everywhere, you know, the street lights. You're not going to see it. And we're talking 8-9 blocks from downtown. There is no major city in the United States, in my opinion. And I have been to a lot. I've been to Baltimore. I've been to Chicago. Yes, I've been on the south side of Chicago, too. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Atlanta. There is no major city in the United States of America that will allow just 8 blocks outside of downtown for it to look like it's just falling apart. None. And it's not like Detroit is doing that intentionally. Like I said, it is a systematic thing to make the city appear as if it is falling apart. And I'm not, I know I hate to say conspiracy because I try and stay away from those things. But when you look at the reality, you're looking at the fact that there's a lot of people, you know, and there's some smart people in city government. I'm not, you know, judging their smarts. But a lot of them that are in city governments don't know a lot about finance, don't know a lot about economics. Okay, I'm not saying everyone, I'm saying some. And it's easy in order to have people that know these things get over on you and tell you, oh, this is the way to go. You do this. Oh, no, we will help you if you do this, you know, and do that. And then basically you go and put yourself out there, and it turns out that they're stabbing you in the back. This is what pretty much has happened to the city of Detroit. It started with the deal between Archer and Engler back in 1998. It continued under the Granholm administration, and Jennifer Granholm was a Democrat, and Rick Snyder just exacerbated because as a CP and a failed business person from Gateway Computers that went bankrupt because they sold everything to China, he knew exactly how to basically, what's the word I want to say, demolish the city of Detroit, just like he demolished the computer. And then when we talked about Dave Bing, oh, he's no better. His business went also bankrupt.
Right.
So, and then Kevin Orr, what is he? He's a bankruptcy attorney. I mean, people need to understand that they had no plans on trying to help the city of Detroit. Their whole game on this was to see how many cheap properties that they can try and own for pennies on the dollar. And if you don't think that Rick Snyder and his buddies and Kevin Orr and his buddies are not cashing in on this, I got swampland in Michigan to sell you. Of course they are.
Well, you know what? And I believe it sounds totally correct. But I guess my question is, why haven't the people of Detroit, the bodies? I mean, if this information is available, I mean, it's a fight call to me. It's almost like, then let's not let it happen. You know, and I guess I think outside of the box, but it's like I understand everything that's going on, like everybody on the phone call does. But I do. I'm also a person that thinks that. Well, what about how do we stop this? How do we make changes? Who steps up and try to make contact? Who lawyers do we get involved to help salvage what is left that's not being done? I mean, you know, this is not just the city of Detroit. This is all over America. I said we have to have a larger fight cry, you know, than we have a dream speech right now. You know, what happened?
You
know,
do.
You know, Martin Luther King went for the vote right to give us the votes right, and they just voted it out with Clarence Thomas. Uncle Tom ass voting this out and taking away the voters' rights. Nobody even do anything about it. You know, they think the Supreme Court, well, we don't need voters' rights for black folks anymore. It is what it is. I mean, it's a bigger picture than Detroit, but Detroit is just a sample of what's going on, the conspiracy, and it is something. But what do we do? And if all this information is available that you're talking about and Jason and everybody's talking about being together, how come the regular citizens are not getting, you know, information on this and basically giving some kind of call for what?
Can I answer that question? I would love to answer that question. Number one, there is the people are listening to traditional media. Traditional media as in WXYZ, Channel 7, WDIV, Channel 4, and Fox 2 News, and sometimes Channel 62. And then they're also reading the online resources of the Detroit News and the Detroit Free Press instead of reading the online resources of the Michigan Citizen. Even the Michigan Chronicle right now, in my opinion, is suspect. Okay? What you need to understand is that when you're reading these stories, they are basically, in most part, being paid around the table through advertising or something of that nature in order to write stories that will seem favorable to whoever it is that's paying them. So it's easier to say, well, Detroit is falling apart, is bankrupt, you know, those people can't manage to do anything. It's easier to put out negative stories about maybe the three-year-old, which is a negative story, I'll admit, the three-year-old that was left home alone all night, you know, in Detroit. But trust me, it's happened in the suburbs, too, because I have lived in the suburbs most of my life. And believe me, these stories happen in the suburbs, but you never hear about them. It's easier to basically put a perception of negativity around Detroit because they're being paid to do this stuff. Now, as for your other question, why can't we get better leadership? There is. In this election, in my opinion, there's better leadership. In my opinion, Crystal Crittenden and Tom Barrow they have the capabilities to understand what the game is, how the game is being played, and what's the plan on to stop the game. And they can actually educate the masses in regards to that, but the masses have to realize you can't keep feeding into these, no offense, crap media resources that are being paid by the powers that be to keep the propaganda growing. And I really hate that. It's sad like that, especially in today in America, but it is just like that. And you have to go beyond those resources in order to get the true information. And if they do that, then they will not be as blinded as they are now. And you also have to look at, a lot of people do social media. And no offense, the powers that be know a lot of people do social media. If people do not think that some of these forum posters, the people that you see on the Detroit News in the comment section, maybe the folks you see on Facebook or Twittering, are not being paid to tweet these negative things or better yet, controversial things, again, I got swampland in Michigan to sell you. Of course they are. They're being paid to push the agenda of what it is that these people want. And if you don't know that, you're being fooled again. You got to go beyond. And I guess I can speak on this because I am getting, I'll have my MBA in business. I know how those strategy works. I know how marketing strategy works. They're using marketing in order to confuse the masses. And unfortunately, it's working quite well. But what I try and do is educate the public in regards to trying to see what the truth is in regard throughout the smoke screen, and that way you can make up your mind, which is what it is you need to do instead of having other folks make up your mind for you.
I couldn't agree with you more, especially when you talked about the Michigan, the Chronicle being suspect. I thought they've been suspect for a while. And, you know, that goes along even with, like, Detroit Public Schools. I speak on that a lot because I'm an educator. I was with that. You know, the media was not allowed to sit, they would not go in and look at all these things that was going on with Roy Roberts and Robert Bob, all this that he had done. I mean, it took, someone, like I said, from the underground to come in and they wrote a whole expose on Robert Bob and, dating back to his crooked ways way back into the 80s. But the media had this information. There are people that sent it to people at the Free Press and the news. They wouldn't talk about that because they were told, no, we're giving this guy a pass, and so we're going to make it seem like he's doing such a great thing. And every time they would do something, they were right there in the news, 247. They were on there. Roy Roberts, the same thing. And they want to, do you actually think that somebody who comes from GM that has no background in education is going to come to a school district and all of a sudden he's turning things around and he's going to raise student achievement and he knows exactly what to do to educate children? Come on. And then when they talk, they were just talking about, they said this Thurtill Elementary in Detroit Public Schools was the top elementary school in the state, from this Mackinac report, but the underlying message was based on economic factors. So basically all they said was that Thurtill, they were the best of the poor kids in the state. So they want, use that. But, is the achievement gap being closed? No, because, this is what the media wants. And that's what it is. And people have to stop believing everything that they hear in the media and, like I said, and really start going to the real sources of the information, and getting that. And the one thing you talk about, why we keep putting these people in Detroit, for so long, we have just, a lot of times just voting for people just on name recognition because they've been there for so long or because, we know them or they get up there and they can, they can preach a good sermon or they can talk, real, really well. They don't look at saying like, okay, what is this person's quality? What is their experience? What is their background? And what are they going to bring this elected position that's going to benefit the citizen, you know, the citizens of Detroit. And, you know, until we, you know, really get there and to begin to really elect real, qualified and, you know, people to these elected offices, we're going to keep getting the same thing. It's, you know, insanity. You keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same results.
But with all this information I'm hearing, why isn't the citizens, I mean, you know, Jason, I've done many shows. I'm not from Detroit, but I've done many shows. I got family in Detroit and friends in Detroit, but I've done many shows on this subject and topic. Even had Coleman Young Jr. on the program trying to see if there's anything we can do to stop it. But now we see it. We couldn't stop the emergency manager. We couldn't stop the bankruptcy. Why don't you hear, and I don't know, I just want to know why, I'm quite sure my audience want to know, why don't you hear an outcry besides from our radio program and probably Monica's radio program about this? You know, well, I mean, I be on Facebook, I be on a chat room. I don't see the average citizen people in rooms talking about, let's come out here, let's meet down here. What y'all think about this? What y'all think about that? I mean, why is that?
Well, I mean, you have that, but I guess my thing is, like, I don't know if it's getting out, you know, how we can get the message out, because you do have, you know, those grassroots organizations out of here. I mean, you have, you know, Stand Up for Democracy, you know, that came out, you know, came out and got the petition signed to repeal Public Act 4, you know, that the first emergency manager law that they had, and we repealed it. We, you know, put it, you know, got it out and got rid of it, you know, and they got it on the ballot. We came back in November of 2012, and we voted that down. You know, over 50%, you know, 52-53% of Michigan voted it down. But then you come back, and this, you know, state legislator, they go back in and craft a new law. And you
3 weeks.
Like,
it took them 3 weeks to do it. Make sure that's very
exactly.
Important. 3 weeks they came up with
right.
A new law and had it passed and basically signed in 3 weeks from repealing the old one.
You know, so that you do have, you know, because you have a number of lawsuits that are, you know, that are out, even with against this emergency manager law. And actually, because the NAACP and a couple other groups have actually gone in, and you have a federal judge that has taken that case. The fight is going on, but it's just the thing that the volume is turned down, you know, too low, and that's what we need to figure out as a way of how can we increase the volume to get out there to get more people to see what's going on. And when we don't have access to the media, we don't have access to these, forms of mass communication, you know, to get the word out there. That's why it looks like it's, you know, nothing's being done. But, you know, there is work being done. And I wanted to, you know, to go, like we're just sitting back and not, you know, doing anything. There are people out there in the fight. You know, there are people that are out there. We organize. We, you know, we get together and we do what we have to do. And then make that. But like I said, it's just, you know, our ability to be able to, you know, to reach, you know, the masses and be able to communicate what we're doing. That's where we're having the issue, I think, here in, you know, in Detroit and what's going on in this. We just can't get it out.
And that's done intentionally because they don't want people to know. That's done. I mean, the efforts, like, for instance, with Voice of Detroit, Diane Borowski, I believe her name is, she does great work with Voice of Detroit, real grassroots, underground, blogging, pretty much that lady be everywhere. And she is I believe she's a Jewish woman, and she just really believes in the city of Detroit and its people. Not getting paid anything. I mean, she does this out of the kindness of her heart, might as well say. And there's efforts to suppress that. The Michigan Citizen. Great work done at the Michigan Citizen.
Yes.
Most people outside of the city of Detroit don't even know the Michigan Citizen exists. And this paper has been around for years. I mean, you know, they may know about the Chronicle, which, you know, Blanco Thompson, wow, I don't even know what to say about that guy. But, you know, they don't know about the Michigan Citizen. There's the Change Coalition, which used to be actually Detroit Rainbow Push. David Bullock, guest basically has decided to join with the Change Coalition. They're doing great work. You know, they're doing, I mean, they helped with the Stand Up for Democracy petition. You don't hear a lot about that. Again, it's the press. It's done that way for a reason. If people don't believe that it is an intentional thing in order to keep the masses uneducated, of course it is, which is why you have to go out and you have to seek your media. You can't just wait for the easy way. The easy way is to turn on your boob tube, and I say that literally, your tube TV, which is now a plasma screen, and, you know, oh, wow, goodness gracious, Channel 7. Well, if everything they're telling me is true. No, you have to go beyond that, because if that's all you believe and you pick up, you know, your Detroit News, or better yet, find it online, to everything that they tell you is the gospel truth, that's exactly what those folks like Rick Snyder and the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, EL, wants you to believe. And a lot of the state legislatures, some Democrats and many Republicans up inside of our state house and state senate, they want you to believe that, because that way you're not going to stand up and actually speak and fight. You're not going to tell your neighbors, your friends, your associates inside of your community, look, what they're doing to us is wrong, and this is the ways that we can try and fight it. We have to go beyond what it is that is easy to access and easy to see. And we have to question why. And one of the reasons I want to say this, for particularly for DPS, because I went to DPS schools for 4 years, through the fourth, through pretty much almost close to the midterm of the eighth grade. The first school I learned how to play a musical instrument in was Durfee Middle School over by Central High School, and actually it was a violin. A lot of the suburban schools, and believe me, I came up in suburban schools, didn't even have violins within their schools, period. But yet and still, I was learning how to play a violin in the sixth grade at Durfee Middle School. So please don't believe the hype that they give you about DPS being the worst system ever. Yes, it does have some issues, but that was because the financing to operate those schools and educate the children in those schools and the support in order to make sure that teachers had the tools that they need to educate those children was siphoned in out of that particular system. DPS was not, I would even go all the way up until really 1989, DPS was not the system that you know or hear about today. It was a very strong school system. And I just want to make sure that I give that, you know, out to DPS, because it really hurts my heart to, you know, have people believe that, oh, these schools have been like this for decades. No, they really have not. But if you've taken money out of the schools and you've sent it elsewhere, of course the school system is going to fail. But go ahead, I'll leave the mic to someone else now.
Well, no, my question was, you know, go on there, Gino, go on there. Wrap it out. I'll let y'all finish, you know. Because my question was, you figure that people might be at the councilman or alderman or the elected official's office in mass droves screaming, why did you sign this? Why did you pull this instead of staying at home? That's all I was saying. But go ahead. Go on, somebody else jump in.
Well, one of the things I was going to say, even if you don't have the you know, you don't know about the newspapers, you know, Michigan Chronicle probably has been sold out. That's only staying in business. But you still have your church groups. You know, the churches in masses can get a lot of information out to the general public, especially when the ministers and preachers come together. So you collectively approach them about all of the incidents or the events that are happening and how they affect their congregation. And you ask them to be a part of it by submitting, you know, opportunities for this information to be talked to with them about, you know, you start off little and people start getting understanding, because people follow with the church. Cause you got to do it your own way. You know, we can always say there's no way to do anything unless we come together collectively and try to do something. Because a person that doesn't stand for anything will fall for anything. So if you don't get out there and try to make an attempt, like this lady, this Jewish lady, she's talking about, and make an attempt. I mean, you know, it's always going to be this the way it is until people start grouping together. I guess I keep going back to the same thing, song in the city of Detroit. And I don't even know if the fact that they said Detroit is 48% illiterate is half the problem. And could it be? You know, could that be a problem when you're trying to unite and come together? People just don't understand how important it is. And maybe they don't have the ability to conceptually to even feel enough or feel prideful enough. And like I was saying before, that's why, and we were talking about the neighborhoods. I wanted to go on another point, talking about the neighborhoods. And I can understand. Now, every city ain't just completely going to be on fire. When I say that, but the neighborhoods that you grow up in and you see, it doesn't take long. I mean, obviously, if one or two people walk away from their house, three or four or five or six, and it becomes epidemic, every neighborhood has it. Even in the suburbs, can go through the same type of demise if they decide to do that. But, I mean, like I said, the banking system did a lot of damage to Detroit, along with these Republicans, along with all these guys that don't have the best interest of Detroit, and they know it's a money shift. Jason, you're 100% right. That's why Snyder is buying into Detroit, because there is something there. There is a future for Detroit, and you're right. They might not want black people to be solely involved in this process, but it's depending on what kind of process it is. I mean, black people, we got to stop saying it's on them, it's on us. We live here. Black people live here and reside here. So, you know, why not come together collectively and try to make and protect your ground, protect your own, stand your ground? They do it all over the country. That's what it is. Stand your ground. If you stand your ground with words, you know, and actions, you know, it don't have to be a gun. It's just stand your ground. If you firmly believe in the city of Detroit and you don't like what's going on, you create a network and ability to do this. Go to the church. There's churches that cater to thousands and thousands of people, you know, all over the city. And you get the message out, and they have all these people coming in and out of the church, and you start off there, and you start creating little media outlets and passing out literature and get people to understand it and try to get as much offense. I mean, it's got to be an effort to wake people up. And then I go back to, is it because it's 48% of Lindsay and people don't care? You know, and you gotta chastise the own citizens of Detroit. If you gotta care more, we can talk about it. We can come in these formats and we can talk about all the problems Detroit got. But if nobody does nothing, it's gonna be nothing but talk. It's a lot of things that need to be done, and it's not a lot of people doing it. Everybody's deterred by the fact of what the city council members are getting caught up doing. The mayor gets, you know, Kwame put us under, and everything else, and it's been a ball of what. And it could have been a complete setup, and everything could continue that way if we don't start waking up and say, wait a minute, we gotta defend our own here, because you know I live here, so they ain't gonna come in my house and try to boot me out of here because they wanna. I'm holding up progress. You know, one of the things that I thought was wrong, what should have been with City of Detroit, they should have offered some type of program for college students to move back into the City of Detroit and give them some way to purchase home at a lower cost to be able to live in there. Because part of the problem, Detroit ain't got no money because they got more renters than they got homeowners. So there's less money coming through the system. When houses burn down, that's getting rid of city revenue. So every time a house is destroyed and there's no revenue being generated off that land, that's money that the City of Detroit loses. So even if you got some people in home for less expensive, you still are creating a tax revenue out of the city of Detroit to help the city of Detroit grow. I don't agree with them. You know, when the Governor Snyder them were talking about and the guy that he was talking to and how they were, you know, nobody lives over here and nobody lives over there, and you cut the city in half. Maybe you do close off Detroit, but you make Detroit like a suburb within a suburb, like Highland Park, and create another tax revenue. I'm sure, I don't know legally if it's even possible. But if there's something you have to do and make it an industrial area or something that's a way that's already mowed down to try to keep money coming to Detroit, I mean, is that the answer to decrease the size? I always thought I would always try to increase the size to get more money to keep Detroit the way it is instead of cutting it back. But, you know, obviously government has a lot of laws and things that they do to protect people back and forth, or, you know, protect the laws to protect the government from taking over the city. So I'm not sure 100%. But, I mean, you think this from thinking common sense. The people in Detroit, is the 48% literacy, if this is a problem, is the people not able to even think or even get on a, you know, be directed? Are they even mentally strong enough to come together and put something together? We haven't been able to do it with our mayor or the city council. When Kwame Kilpatrick was first voted, I said he's too young. Even his mother said he wasn't ready. But we voted him in anyway. When I said I think he's too young, you just hate him. I said, Kwame Kilpatrick reminds me of Detroit back in the 70s when we had a bunch of pimps. You know, the pimp can come up to you, and he can look any kind of way. But after he spin those words on you, you did everything he asked you to do. And that's kind of how he always came across me, a sharp dresser, quick talking. But people followed him as the Messiah. He was the Messiah for Detroit. He was going to bring Detroit back. He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything but rip Detroit off. And people still to this day say they will vote him back in because he's black and young. Because he looks like them and they think he acts like them. And he should get the second opportunity to ruin Detroit even more than he did before. And I'm not trying to say it's any other kind of way, but I said we got to open up our eyes and we got to start demanding that the Detroit, our political leaders, be accountable in some kind of way. Dave Bing is doing some shady ass stuff, and he should have been taken out of office, but he should have voted out of office.
He should have been recalled.
Because they have so many efforts, you know, they were started to talk about doing a recall on, on Bing, but. But one thing, I don't disagree with Eugenia was saying that, you know, Kwame Kilpatrick was too young. I think that, you know, the brother had a lot of potential, but I think it was his own personal, his own personal ambitions and what he was doing. Because, he had the talent. You know, he had the talent. He had the gift. He had the skill to, you know, he could have been a great public servant, a great politician or whatever. But, you know, he was just on, you know, had a whole other agenda, you know, and that's just his mentality. Because I don't think that is.
When you say that, and when I'm saying he was too young, I'm saying I'm not talking about his physical age. I'm talking about his record. He's too young in politics. Think about what he only served for so long. He should have been the mayor of Highland Park that was in trouble and then rose to the city. I totally. When I say young, I'm not just talking about his physical age. I'm talking about his experience. And his experience.
When you think about it, I think Kwame Kilpatrick served two terms, I believe that is, and so that would be, or three. Could have been three terms. Three terms inside of the state house. State house has two-year terms. So in other words, he has served 6 years inside of the state house. It could have been, I could be wrong on that. Either it was six or four, but it wasn't more than six, I do know. Either way, thank you for the correction. Either way, he was in Lansing, okay? He wasn't in Detroit. He wasn't really, he may have served a community and a neighborhood in Detroit, but really the most of the things that he was doing was reflected from a Lansing point of view down in comparison from I'm right here and I'm in the legislative executive or either legislative body as in the city council or the executive office as in the mayor's office or somewhere under that of the city of Detroit. That's not where he was. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. He was too, in my opinion, young, okay, not age-wise, but really political school, in order to handle a major economic city like the city of Detroit. And a lot of people would say, well, what? I mean, how are you calling this a major economic city? Well, think about it. When Detroit declared bankruptcy, everybody and their mother knew within 24 hours. When Jefferson County, Alabama declared bankruptcy in 2011, did you even know that Jefferson County, Alabama declared bankruptcy in 2011? How about Stockton, California? How about Amelia, California? These bankruptcies happened in 2011, 2012. Most people had never even heard about it, but I bet you they heard about Detroit's. Then, of course, it's a major international city, you know, and it's economic force. And you got to be able to handle that, and you got to be able to handle the people, might as well say, that look to do Detroit harm. And you have to be able to keep those people at bay. There's only a couple of candidates in this race right now, and I'm not going to mention their names again because I'm not supporting anyone in particular. But there's a couple candidates in this race right now for mayor that can do that. I really hope that the people make the right decision and not the wrong one. Because if Detroit gets another 4 years of bad leadership, I really hate to say, I can't even begin to imagine what will happen to that city, as in the neighborhoods and the people.
Well, before I got about 10 minutes before I let everybody go. I got one quick break I got to make. Hold on, Gino, Jason, and Monica. I'll come back with Jason on PSA. Then Monica will tell more people about more things about her radio program, the time, and all like that. But let me take this quick CSU break since Monica is working on her master's. So that means she's in college. So let me give a quick pause to my college alma mater, who just gave Cook County in-state tuition. Go on ahead, CSU.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing to you the livest black college in the land, CSU!
Once upon a time, not long ago, when we wore cross colors and lived life slow, between pen and Jews, where the breezeway stood, somebody said party and it all was good. I had a little voice inside my head, so I looked into the mirror and I slowly said, boy, you about to bleed wine and gold. Go hard on the yard and live out cold. You got the baddest band in the land at the game, Marching Marauders, y'all know the name. Take it to the gym, it was more of the same. Cheerleaders who love to shake that thing. At the ballroom party, we'll stomp the yard. Leave the ballroom sweating cause we dance so hard. I'ma rep this place till the casket drop, cause the CSU party don't stop. The greatest story that's ever been told. 1400 Brush Road Road. Tell it all day, it'll never get old. The mind of Marauders, maroon and the gold. I remember when I came, I was just a little lame. Got my convocation card stamped, got up in the game. Stood in the line for financial aid. When my refund came, I was major paid. I knew that it was on when the homecoming came. We gon' beat up on somebody at the homecoming game. The band gon' go out, step it up, show out. Home team wins once again, it's a blowout. The AKAs and the DS team. SG Rose and the Z5B. KA5I5s and the Q's. A5As and the Blue 5 Blue. Organizations and all of the calls. Survive the tornado, we will not lose. From Wesley to Hallie Q Brown. Anywhere you meet us, it's about to go down. The greatest story that's ever been told. 1400 Brush Road Road. Tell it all day, it'll never get old. The mighty Marauders, maroon and the gold. From the windows to the wall. Wild Willie to the residence hall. From the Union, the Merce, to the gym, to the field. We run with the best cause we're just so real. Football, baseball, track team, more. Volleyball, hoop team, get it on the floor. I need the excitement, love the allure. I came back out, this is y'all's encore. I put my time in, work to get mine in. This train is rolling, go ahead and climb in. All my alumni, homeboys and homegirls, I surely miss y'all since y'all been gone. If you went to Central, then use a Marauder. Meet up at the yard like, welcome back home. So get on the wagon, come join the crew at the hottest HBCU. This is the greatest story that's ever been told. 1400 Brush Road Road. Tell it all day, it'll never get old. The mighty Marauders, maroon and the gold. The greatest story that's ever been told. 1400 Brush Road Road. Tell it all day, it'll never get old. The mighty Marauders, maroon and the gold. And the gold.
That's your cue, Jason. What's up? That's your cue.
Oh, all right. Hey, you know, we just got off that talking about the mighty Central State University, the Marauders. I want to let everybody know about the Marauder Roundup with the Detroit Alumni Chapter that's coming up August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. That's next weekend. We're going to have a fabulous event. This is a pre-homecoming event, the Marauder Summer Roundup. On Friday, we're going to have our Marauder Roundup at Friends Cocktail Lounge at 21633 8 Mile Road. And then on Saturday, our big main event is going to be the Midnight Marauder Scholarship Crew. And this is number 4. We're going to be on the water. It's the White Night Experience. So come on out in your white gear, your sheet, you know, your summer white. Come on out. And then on Sunday, we're going to have our annual cookout. Detroit Alumni Cookout, so we want everybody to come in. We're going to be inviting the incoming freshmen that's going down to class of 2017 to come on out and fellowship with us there. That's going to be at Belle Isle at the Woodside Shelter. That's on the backside of the island. You know, and all this, all three events are just for $50 for the weekend. And all this is going to our scholarship fund, our Michigan Marauder Scholarship Fund, so that we can help those students that are coming from the Michigan area and also Toledo, Ohio, help them out financially with scholarships and other financial ways. So we want you all to come on out, support us, help us out in this event. Come on down and have a good time, because I think, you know, we're Central State family. We need to go ahead and see each other and, you know, and get it in this summer. You can go to our Facebook page, you know, that we're on there, the Detroit Alumni Chapter, Central State University, and, you know, get your tickets. You can pay through PayPal or give us a call.
All right. Not a problem. Now, Monica, why don't you tell all our listeners again where they can find you at, and maybe you can help these people in Detroit galvanize, organize, and mobilize. I'm quite sure my friends like Gino and Jason will be happy to assist you. So make sure you get the, you know, the information out there. These guys are motivated, and I'm quite sure you can hear the passion in Gino's voice that he wants something done. So where they can find you at, Monica, please tell my audience.
Sure, no problem. You can follow our blog. We do have a blog. Actually, it is www.rojsnews.com. Again, that's www.rojsnews.com. Basically, we have three writers at the blog, and we pretty much do grassroots citizen journalism. That's what we do, is we go find the stories and we investigate the stories and then let you make your decision in regards to what is the best thing for you to do for your economic best interest for yourself and your family. We also have a radio show that we do on a Blog Talk Radio Network. We have been podcasting since 2010. That is called Independent Underground Radio Live. You can find us on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at www.blogtalkradio.com/ROJS Radio. Again, www.blogtalkradio.com/ROJS Radio. If you're on Twitter, you can tweet us too at I as in ice cream, U as in Ulysses, News Talk. Again, that's IU News Talk. And we do take donations. We are independent media. We don't get any corporate sponsoring at all. So if you'd like to send us a donation, feel free to do so at www.rojsnews.com. There is a PayPal donation button that's right on the top of the page, and we'll appreciate anything that you can give us. Thank you.
Not a problem. I don't know you got a stage, you know, but I'm going to make this. I got you always on because you're on my radical plan and people like that. I know you want solutions and problems like that. And when you said, you know, you really, I'm quite sure my audience needs to hear when you're coming from and stuff like that. So, why don't you go give me like a 2-minute shout out, you know, I played out. Everyone say shout out. So you guys have a football Thursday, come on Thursday. If everybody want to know that, shout out. You know anything to say about fade out?
I just want to say, you know, it's good to hear people, intelligent black folks, get together and communicate and talk about some things that come straight from the heart and get passionate about it, and just put the action committee to work like the brothers on the last show. Let's get together, you know, because we can talk about it, but if we don't get united, it doesn't matter. Talk, you know, just, you know, that's all we're doing, and we got to get action, you know. We got to save Detroit, you know, from the power of that people. It won't happen unless we get together. So, you know, I'm always down for the cause. I always believe there's an answer. We just got to keep. We
got
to keep asking the question,
what we want to
be.
Well, I let that be the last word. And my man Charles Lovers on, he said, the solution is go to thinkordie.org. Listen, Monica, thank you for being on my show. You know what I'm saying? You always shoot me anytime. Most of my listeners go check you on with a Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m., correct? They took you on this day. Jason, I'm trying to get down there for that alumni ticket. I got Mike Flow and Fred's coming in. Also, I get my power. I'm trying to pick them free. I'm trying to get down to Joe and Gino for that weekend. Also, this is the Underground Radio Network tomorrow. It's Thursday. Check us out. We met everybody. I'm going to get down. I'll check you out.
Burning. Coming out of a liquor store with three pieces of black liquor.
y'all. Mr. Policeman thought it was a gun, thought it was a one, shot him down, y'all. That ain't right. Then his mama screamed, ain't no need for sunlight. Ain't no need for moonlight. Ain't no need for street light. Just burning real bright. Some folks say we gon' fight, 'cause this here thing just ain't right. 1960 what? 1960 who? 1960 what? 1960 who? 19. Hey, the Motor City's burning.